It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. Like the Rubik's Cube or Pet Rocks, Beanie Babies were the fad of their time. The difference being no one thought they would be financing their future investing in Pet Rocks. In 1998, a single Beanie Baby sold for $10,000. More than any other consumer good in history, Beanie Babies were carried to the height of their success by a collective belief that their values would always rise. At one time, Beanie Babies comprised 10% of all sales on eBay. Zach Bissonette has written about financial trends and more in the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, and other publications. He tells the unpredictable rise and dramatic fall of plush toys in his book, The Great Beanie Baby Bubble. We welcome Zach Bissonette back to the show. Zach, thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
So we've seen speculation run amok in markets for everything from real estate to baseball cards. Was there something unique about the property of Beanie Babies that speculators would just run wild with their feeling that these things would be valuable for, really, valuable at all?
The common theme between, I think, all of these speculative bubbles, whether that's real estate, Bitcoin at the moment, and all of these other things, is it begins as a micro phenomenon. And in the case of Beanie Babies, that was a few women who I profiled in the book in the suburbs of Chicago who were chasing the rarest pieces that truly were rare because they came out before Beanie Babies were popular. And they were produced in very small quantities. And as they started to pay ever-increasing values for them, the sort of word of people making money in Beanie Babies spread. And that mythology of people getting rich in these plush animals is really more than anything else what drove the craze.
Perhaps it was a product of the conditions of the time. You mentioned that this sort of all began in the suburbs of Chicago. Was the fact that it was a localized phenomenon important in spreading that mythology, as you say, that it built slow and people didn't have the ability to throw it on eBay initially?
Yes, it absolutely was important. So in the beginning, Ty Warner introduced Beanie Babies in 1994, and at first nothing happened, but he was this very sort of obsessive-compulsive tinkerer, and he would release a piece, and then he would change the design on it because he decided he didn't like it anymore. So Peanut the Elephant was originally royal blue, then he changed it to light blue. Fast forward to early 1996, and these women start to collect them. And in an effort to sort of assemble complete collections of Beanie Babies, this group of women who I talked to literally ran up $1,000 a month phone bills, calling gift shops and hospital gift stores all over the country to try to find the Beanie Babies. Because in Chicago, you couldn't find them anymore. In other parts of the country, you still could because no one really cared about Beanie Babies yet. So there was this kind of arbitrage trade where you could be in Chicago, call California, get Beanie Babies there, and then sell them locally. And it was the women calling all over the country that started to spread the craze nationally. It was the first toy craze in a very long time, really since the first toy commercial that Mattel did for the Burp Gun, I think 1954. It was the first toy that spread without the benefit of any advertising.
You mentioned the creator of Beanie Babies, Ty Warner, and his company. How much of the success of the company and the rise of this bubble actually had to do with him?
It's such a complicated question. It's the question. It's a perfect question. I would say accidentally, a lot of it had to do with him. So Forbes did a piece, I think, in 1996 or 1998, maybe, called Mystique Marketing, where they talked about Ty Warner's sort of genius of limiting the supply and discontinuing pieces. And really, it didn't start out as genius. It started out as kind of madness, where he would decide that he didn't like the way a piece looked anymore, so he would change it. And when he changed it, the original version became rare. Once they started to take off among collectors, Ty was sort of very savvy in figuring out how to play that and manipulate that. And then the biggest thing that they did was a young employee of his named Lena Trevetti in late 1995 came to him with the idea to create a website. And this was before Mattel or Hasbro were really doing anything at all on the Internet. Ty started announcing which pieces would be retired online. And on January 1st, 1997, they posted the first retirement announcement of which Beanie Babies were being discontinued. And it was like an international event among speculators who stayed up, you know, skipped New Year's parties to sort of hit reload, reload, reload on the Ty.com page. Really kind of a lot of people's first experience with Internet addiction was through Beanie Babies. And that was a huge part of what drove it.
So Warner had been in the toy industry for a long time. Was he aware that a fad could be disastrous? There was the Cabbage Patch doll, I guess bubble, as yes. it were. How did he react to that and plan for that with the company?
It's so funny you mentioned the Cabbage Patch doll. Ty was quite obsessed with the Cabbage Patch craze. He had seen that it had bankrupted Coleco, which was the company that had made it. One of the things that Ty understood that other people did not, and that even his own sales force didn't understand, was that what was driving the popularity of the toy was that you couldn't get it. And so in early 1998, I think, right at the height of it, Ty decided and informed all the retailers that he would only ship them 36 Beanie Babies of each style per month. And stores called and complained to the sales reps and to him relentlessly and saying, you know, we could sell 144 of these. Why will you only ship us 36? And Ty's people kind of explained, look, the reason you can sell any at all is because we're only going to ship you 36. If we ship you enough to meet the demand, no one's going to want any of them. So that was the first thing, is to be understood that you had to keep the supply tight in order to keep the demand going. The second thing he did, and a little bit on the more questionable side, is that in order to get Beanie Babies, his sales reps were forcing stores to buy Ty's other plush lines that they didn't want as much. So his sales reps had a goal that you had to sell at least 10% non-Beanie Baby product, and a lot of stores got stuck with Ty inventory that they couldn't sell because it was not Beanie Babies, but they had to buy it in order to get the Beanie Baby.
Well, speaking of questionable behavior, there certainly is a lot of it that you cover in your book, and a lot of it with Ty Warner. This is a guy that, as you mentioned, was so obsessive that he would alter the designs of these Beanie Babies at trade shows. He would go out and he'd be plucking out individual fabric he thought didn't look right in the design.
Yeah.
And he had a real mean streak. For instance, he would do things like get a dig in at his ex-girlfriend through one of the Beanie Babies that was released after the book.
This is one of my favorite stories. I don't know how much of the story I can tell on the radio. His girlfriend was a woman named Patricia Roach, who was there when he started the company, who ran the office while he was at trade shows. And one of the original 9 Beanie Babies was named Patty the Platypus. And this is funny in hindsight because, you know, the 9 Beanie Babies, it was like, you know, you had a dog, a moose, and then out of nowhere you had a platypus, which if you were to make 9 animals, that would not necessarily be the most obvious one that would come to mind. And the poem that Ty wrote for the hang tag for Patty the Platypus, in honor of his ex-girlfriend, was, "Ran into Patty one day while walking. Believe me, she wouldn't stop talking. Listened and listened to her speak. That would explain her extra-large beak."
Did she continue to work for the company after they broke up?
This is what's funny. So a couple of years after they broke up, he called her that he was having trouble with his UK operation, the distributors in the United Kingdom. It's a long, complicated story where he'd hired these Jehovah's Witnesses to run his distribution in the UK, and they were not doing a very good job, and I think he was concerned some of them were embezzling from him. And he basically handed the distributorship of the United Kingdom over to Patricia Roach as a separate company that she would own and run. And this was right as Beanie Babies were starting to catch on. So Patricia Roach, Ty Warner's ex-girlfriend, moved to the United Kingdom to run Ty UK and became one of the highest-earning female executives in the United Kingdom at the time, made millions and millions and millions of dollars, and still hates his guts to this day.
We're talking with Zach Bissonnette. He is the author of The Great Beanie Baby Bubble, Mass Delusion and the Dark Side of Cute. How much money did Ty Warner make with this company?
Insane amounts of money. I mean, this is what drew me to the story first, was looking into it and realizing that it was so much larger than you ever would have guessed. So in 1998, Ty's pre-tax income, not revenue, income, was about $700 million. Today, he owns the Four Seasons Hotel in New York, which he recently turned down an offer of $900 million for. He owns the Four Seasons Hotel in Santa Barbara, and he built a $150 million personal estate in Montecito, California, which is, if you're ever in Montecito, it is an incredible-looking property if you can see it kind of over the wall. But anyway, all of that money is the product of these $5 animals that people thought would make them rich.
Some of that money had to go back to the government not too long ago. He put in a plea of guilty on some stunning amounts of tax evasion.
Yes, that were not particularly stunning to people who knew him. I mean, I remember calling, you know, former executives, and they're saying, "Oh yeah, you know, Ty would do anything he thought he'd get away with." But yeah, I mean, he had hit, you know, over $100 million in a Swiss bank account overseas and had not reported the income on it. And he paid a $53 million FBAR penalty on the tax evasion. He was sentenced to probation with community service. But the government appealed, and that case is still ongoing. There is a chance he'll end up in prison. Thing I will say, I have spoken to the principal of one of the schools where Ty is doing that community service, and Ty has done just an incredible job mentoring underprivileged kids who are interested in entrepreneurship. They've just learned so much from him.
Entrepreneurs are what fueled the Beanie Baby speculation craze, and the aftermarket prices went insane in this, especially in this 3-year period in the 90s. What is the craziest story that you encountered with Beanie Baby mania, the links people would go to?
I went to West Virginia to a maximum security prison there, where I interviewed a man who murdered a coworker over a Beanie Baby debt. I interviewed a soap opera star who lost his kid's 6-figure college funds on Beanie Babies. I talked with a secondary market dealer named Brian Wallows, who once used a cashier's check for $100,000 to buy 1,000 Princess Diana Beanie Babies. This was huge money at the time. People made and lost fortunes.
What caused the bubble to burst? When did it all start to turn?
So there's kind of two answers to this question, and this is similar to all speculative bubbles. The first reason that it ended is that it was stupid and that it was going to end eventually because, you know, speculative manias are inherently unsustainable. You know, it's a house of cards. But in the case of Beanie Babies, you know, they would do these retirement announcements online and the pieces would always go up in value. And that was kind of the trade that kept it going. This high wire act: buy the Beanie Baby, wait for the retirement announcement, sell it, triple your money. Now, that had been happening for 2 years. At the end of 1998, Ty retired a bunch of pieces over a period of 12 days and announced that on January 1st, all of those pieces would be discontinued. January 1st came, and for the first time ever, the retired Beanie Babies didn't go up in value. They were still worth $5, and one of the collectors remembered that she had been traveling, and she'd been in an airport, and she'd been, I think, a Hudson News, and had seen a stack of retired Beanie Babies that were still on the shelf for $5 each. And that was when she knew it was over. And from there, it was kind of like the fantasy was popped. People had had this idea that it was a law of physics that retired Beanie Babies went up in value. And once they saw it, that didn't necessarily happen. The sales just declined and declined and declined until by early 2000, one of the sales reps, a woman who was in her 20s at the time, who worked for Ty, is a commission salesperson selling Beanie Babies to gift shops that earned $800,000 in 1 year, 1998. By the early 2000s, she was no longer earning a living wage.
So were any of the speculators right? Are any of these things worth anything now?
Largely not. Probably 99.57 repeating percentage of Beanie Babies are worth substantially less than they retailed for. A few of the very, very rare ones, Peanut the Elephant's still worth a few $100s. Some of the prototypes, the like factory samples, there's kind of a weird market of very strange people who pay thousands of dollars for those. But those, you know, those were never sold in stores. But the short answer is that the ones that people lined up at Hallmark stores to buy are worth nothing.
Did Ty do anything particularly smart to plan for the fact that this bubble would burst? The company is still around. They still sell plush toys, not at the rate at which they were at the height of the craze.
He is still the number one guy in plush. I mean, it's amazing because his sales are probably around 5% of what they once were, which too, I mean, if you just think about to still be the leader in market share in your category after your sales fell by more than 90%, it's just, I mean, it's an incredible accomplishment. And I think a lot of it just goes back to Ty's obsession with quality and with low prices, and no one's done that as well as he has.
Zach Bissonnette's book about this phenomenon and its rise and crash is called The Great Beanie Baby Bubble, Mass Delusion and the Dark Side of Cute. Zach Bissonnette, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much. This was a blast.